Thanks for joining us. I'm Tony Bruschi. Today, we're not just talking about the death of Charlie Kirk. We're going to be talking about the death of a sense of safety, no matter how misinformed that sense of safety has been in our American political life. It has existed for quite some time. Today, I it's been shattered, I think, in a new way. This the assassination of Charlie Kirk today, it feels different. And I think it feels different to a lot of us. And we're going to talk about that. This is not about political beliefs. This is not ideology. This is not this or that. You like the man, you hate the man, whatever. It's not about that. It's about where we're at in our society today in America, the temperature at to which we are operating, and the tinderbox to which we've been living for quite some time. If you're just joining us right now, you probably have seen the news, maybe coming out of work today. Political activists and podcaster activists, all of that. Charlie Kirk shot dead while speaking at Utah Valley University. If you've seen the video, I'm sorry. I don't think I wanted to see that video either. You can't unsee it. So if anyone has not seen the video yet, don't look for it. Trust me, it's one of those things you see, you can't unsee. And it's scary as shit that we're living in a place where this can happen that easily. I think a lot of us here, as we're on the eve of the anniversary of 9/11, 23 years ago, our country is now sitting here in a totally different type of situation, in a totally different type of tinderbox that feels like it just blew. What's to come next? We're going to talk about all of that. Robin Drake, retired FBI special agent, chief of the counterintelligence behavioral analysis program. I couldn't think of anyone better to have on right now for a voice of reason, a voice of calm than you to come on and help us kind of break down the events of what we've seen in the last 2 hours. And I invite anybody out there who's watching us on YouTube, on X, on Facebook, throw us your comments, throw us your thoughts, and we'll try and address them, try and get them answered as we go through what happened today. And more importantly, what happens next? What happens tomorrow when we wake up in America in a new, even more politically charged and violent environment than we've had in the past? Robin, thanks for joining me. I caught you. You know you were busy in meetings and such today, and I texted you this afternoon. Hey, we got to do something here?
Yeah, absolutely.
And when you saw the news, and you started to get a chance to absorb it, just give me your reactions from your standpoint.
I'm going to go the pragmatic way first, just because as soon as I see horrendous things happen, I just want more data. I want to get details of what transpired. And the first I'd heard was he was shot. And anytime you start dealing with assassinations, people keep wanting to jump to motives, and just like anything in life, and everyone's always jumping to the conclusions that it's politically based, but it's very rarely, believe it or not. And I'm going to give you stats later on if we want to.
Talk about that, because that's a very interesting aspect to that, quite honestly. But continue on with your thoughts. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Yeah. So believe it or not, the first thing that went through my mind, because if anyone in the world, I don't care what side of politics you're on, is on TikTok, you're going to see Charlie Kirk. I've seen him so much on there, and you see his background, you know about his family if you see him on TikTok at all. And the first thing I went through my mind is, oh my god, a 31-year-old little boy, because you know my kids are just under his age, was just killed, and his babies were denied their dad. Literally, that's the first thought that goes to my mind. And then I go into, all right, let's see and start collecting data on what happened. And then unfortunately, my next thought process on this is, I'm not shocked, because, and you talked about the tinderbox being lit. Tony, I think it's been lit for a while.
It has, but we have seen political assassination attempts in recent years. Obviously, there was the attempt on Trump.
Yep.
There, Gabby Gifford. There's been several recently in Minnesota. There was some, and what's sick about this is I don't remember all the names because there's so many of them.
Yeah, crazy.
where these things are taking place. This is not a, this happens once in a while. I mean, it used to be a, there's always been political assassinations throughout history. We've lived in times in our country where it's been even more volatile than it is right now, believe it or not, if you look at history. Mm-hmm. And yes. I know you're a huge student of history, so I hope some of that can help put some of this into perspective as well. But I feel like we're in a place where this one feels different. And in no way am I justifying that it feels different for this reason or that reason. And I don't know why the slaughter of children in kindergarten classrooms doesn't feel the same as this, at least as far as how the public is going to react to it. I mean, and look, I'm much more broken up when I covered Sandy Hook live on the air. This also breaks me up though too, because this is another human being that was out there. He was expressing his right to freedom of speech. And if you're an American and you believe in what we do in America, and look, both sides have argued for lack of freedom of speech in the recent years to, I think, insanity. But Charlie is someone who was exercising his right to freedom of speech. Agree with him or not, he was doing it. Mm-hmm. And he was out in a public forum on a college campus, as you should be able to do in this country without worry of this. And clearly, there wasn't a lot of worry of this because there wasn't a ton of security. But there were thousands of people there. And there was a lot of people. Obviously, this man draws up crowds. He gets a lot of people interested. And he has conversations or had conversations with people of opposing views. And he would argue them and not attack them as like, you must go, I want to kill you. He conducted somewhat civil conversations. Mm-hmm. Love him or hate him. I recently saw him on Bill Maher's podcast. Yep. And as different as Bill Maher is from him, it was a civil conversation. And it was refreshing to see that in our world today, where this is how we used to do things. Two completely diametrically opposing sides could have a conversation. And it seemed like for being on a one side of the aisle, he was doing that when a lot of people were not. But this is not to get into his politics or anything of that nature. It's the fact that we're living in a place where this has happened now. And he represents, like it or hate it, the views of a lot of Americans. Mm-hmm. And that being said, he represented that more than I would say probably most political figures out there today, probably more than any congressperson, more than any senator. He was a voice for a lot of people. Personally, I disagree with him on a lot of things, but that's not the point. He was the voice for so many people. That's why I think this is hitting so much harder than just a politician, because he went out there and he did express his voice. And the scary thing is now that's been silenced. And we know when people get silenced on one side of things, no matter what side it may be on, there's going to be a backlash. This is not in any way, shape, or form ever a good thing to happen in any sort of civilized culture or society. This is scary as shit. It's heartbreaking. This was, at the end of the day, this was a dad whose child was in the audience. And I hope to God that kid did not see what happened.
You hit a lot of key points there, yeah. Tony, and I think, you know, there's a lot of elements that made this so impactful and will continue to make it so impactful. You know, so let's think back to the Kennedy assassination.
Yeah.
The Kennedy assassination, one, it made us feel unsafe, I think, also because it's open, it's in public. Mm-hmm. And when you're looking at schools that are being shut up and kids, these are indoor events and they're kind of clustered. And so you and me who don't go to that school and in that school, it's going to have an impact on the children that have been killed. No doubt. It's the most heart-wrenching thing.
Oh, yeah.
But it seems like it's a more, you know, again, this psychologically, what I've been thinking about, it's more of a confined event. This is such a public open forum in which these assassination attempts, like against Trump and then against Charlie Kirk, have happened, that because again, our ancient primal drive is to feel safe. We don't feel safe when we can be shot at or around gunfire in such a large venue. And I really think, and this is, let's put the politics of him aside, but his method of engaging, I think, is also part of this. And that is, he didn't argue necessarily like people do typically in politics, where you can be very divisive. Like you said, he had a different point of view that a lot of people, at least half or about half, didn't agree with. But he used what we call the Socratic method. He just asked questions. And he asked questions that got you to think. That's why I love Bill Maher as well. You know, I thought the two of them together is a great example of, hey, here's two people that can diametrically oppose on how to do something, but they can agree on the big why.
Yeah.
We just want a better place to live in for our children. Literally, that's it. And so, and when you actually engage a human being in a thoughtful way, like both of them do, it can, it people gravitate towards it. And when you have something ripped away from you, that innocence really of thinking we can be safe to voice our opinions, or not even voice our opinions, just ask a question. I mean, I would get, I'd love to see the stats on this sometimes, you know, me and my stats.
Yeah.
How many times did he say what he thought versus how many times did he ask what you thought?
Mm-hmm.
That was his method. That's why I've seen him for so many years now, you know, on these videos, the number of people that he would have on his side at these was like zero. Mm-hmm. It's literally him in his tent and he's being assaulted. Now, when you actually watch the most recent videos, there's a lot of people on both sides now.
Yeah.
You know, and so he was a sparker of dialogue.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't matter what side. And so I think that's part of why it's so impactful, because I think him as a human being, that cared about us all and our country and his children, that's what it was really all about.
At the end of the day, it was. I mean, again, I was not someone who agreed with him on his politics in almost any way, shape, or form. But I will stand here forever and say this man had the right to say what he had to say because we live in this country.
And he had a respectful way of doing it, too. And I think that's what really differentiates him from a lot of politicians, because he wasn't a politician. His methodology was... I mean, just take the methodology he had and switch sides. Mm-hmm. That's a good methodology. I mean, it is.
I mean, it engages both sides. It allows a dialogue. That's what we've been missing so much. It's just everybody screams here, everybody screams there. And some would, you know, if you didn't pay attention to him at all, and I really didn't a whole lot. I was not a follower of Charlie Kirk by any means, but I knew he was.
I don't follow politics that much.
But at the end of the day, he was one of the few who did allow the engagement and just shout the other side down. He certainly argued his point without a doubt. You could disagree with it, but he could respectfully disagree. And that's one of those things that I felt made him a bit different. There's far more polarizing figures, I think, other than the Charlie Kirk was.
Yeah, no doubt.
Anyway, it's a horrific tragedy in no way, shape, or form. Whatever side you're on, completely diametrically oppose his beliefs, the comments he made. There was plenty of things the man said that many disagreed with very strongly, and many agreed with very strongly. Either way, this is not how a life should end for speaking out in America. That's what makes us different. We can do this. This is you can go back and forth, but we don't hear each other enough anymore. We don't take that time to dialogue back and forth and understand, where are you coming from? Where am I coming from? And at the end of the day, try to figure out, there is some common ground here. We're not all that extremely different. At the end of the day, this guy was a dad. He wanted the best for his kids by the ways that he viewed appropriate. And again, I'm not going to go into his commentary and shit, but this is not how we do things here.
Yeah. And the thing I think gets highlighted here once again, that we've been on arc for quite a while, is, and this demonstrates perfectly, is that our society has gone from good problem solving skills, or maybe adequate, to zero, because this was an individual, they're going to come to find out, that had, I guarantee you, a lack of problem solving skills, and they thought the only way to solve the problem was violence, that they're going to be celebrated by one side for the act they took. And again, this isn't about So I'll get briefly into the stats.
Yeah.
So on average, again, I just double checked before we came on because I wanted to make sure of this. People want to think this is ideology driven, and it could be because we have no data.
We don't know yet. Yeah.
But this is what I'm not a profiler. I'm a behaviorist inside the FBI. That's what my job was. And mm-hmm. so we understand human behavior. And on average, only 5%, if this individual that's the assassin is a lone actor assassins are only 5% chance that it's ideology based.
Mm-hmm.
Normally, on the higher percentage end, it's an issue that individual has of rage, lack of problem solving skills, and they're trying to impress someone. So let's just take a look at John Hinckley trying to assassinate Reagan. It wasn't about mm-hmm. Reagan and his ideology. It was about that criminal notoriety to try to impress Jodie Foster. If we look mm-hmm. at, and again, I know nothing official's out on the Trump assassination attempt by that young kid back last summer.
Yeah.
And criminal notoriety is really high on that for me because this is a lone, this is a young kid. In my estimation, from the data we have just from social media, was that he was trying to impress someone with his shooting skills because he was feeling disenfranchised, feeling bullied. This had nothing to do with Trump. Trump happened to be an individual of notoriety that would gain the attention he was constantly seeking in his life that he wasn't gaining. This could be, if we're looking at the law of average, the same thing. Charlie just happened to be person that he could have easy access to, because that goes into other things we'll talk about, mm-hmm. you know, that unless you have Secret Service level security and you lock that place down with metal detectors, this was a chance these things were going to happen.
Which then defeats the whole purpose of this sort of college atmosphere.
Right. I know. Yeah. It's crazy, isn't it? So, yeah. You know, what do you do from there? You know, and that's, I think as a society, that's the greatest challenge we have to face is, there's no magic switch on this one. They're really, I mean, my imagining of this, you know, again, taking the pragmatic view is like, what next? What do you do next?
Yeah.
You know, so you could shut it all down. So there's no more free speech whatsoever on college campuses, which, well, that's not a great answer. And then, but then we have the pragmatic way we're looking at this. Well, it comes down to, I'm sorry to say it, it's going to come down to insurance companies being able to really back the being able to insure a speaker coming on campus. Yeah. So what's the insurance company going to want to mandate? Levels
None.
Of security. Well, levels that are security that are beyond the capability of the college campuses do. So yeah. I would imagine college campuses are going to demand, if you want to speak on campus like Charlie Kirk, that you have to meet this level of security threshold to be able to do this in an outside public forum like this.
Which at the end of the day, it'll just get, if somebody wants to go and speak, and there's nothing wrong with what he was doing, coming out and doing what he did and speaking and having a dialogue with people. They'll do it somewhere else. And so it doesn't negate that this is going to happen. It's going to negate it happening on college campuses because they don't want the liability of this happening anymore. Right. But people are, but I don't know that people are going to do it. That's the thing. When people get shot for speaking their opinion, it doesn't always silence it. It right. sometimes turns very vitriolic, and it sometimes turns into a martyr type situation.
Yeah.
And that's a scary thing. And where people will then use the assassination of someone to then justify further violence, which is never going to fix a goddamn thing. And we all know that. But let's talk about the immediate of what is going on right now.
Right.
We are literally in the fog of war as this has happened. We're talking about within the last few hours this took place, whenever you're watching this. How is the FBI and how are agencies right now within the government immediately responding to the new threat picture that has just blown across everybody's radar in the last couple of hours?
So there's going to be numerous things that are happening simultaneously. In general, again, I don't know what the boots on the ground are actually doing because mm-hmm. it really comes down to local leadership and things like that and coordination prior to events, after events. But in general, here's what I would see. So as an agent on the ground, you are going to have an all agent bulletin that goes out to every single FBI agent in the entire bureau and all organizations that run confidential human sources. Typically, what goes out is a bulletin that says, hey, immediately task all your sources for any information that can provide any insight to this event, including videos, all every anything. They're going to be scouring the Confidence Human Source Network to see if anyone has any intel that they could then start feeding. We call it feeding the beast of intelligence, you know, that we can start sifting through. Mm-hmm. That's what you're kind of doing at the strategic level, you know, outside the immediate event from overarching. They're doing that in all across organizations, federal, state, and local. Then on the low, then the they're at the same time, they're going to be canvassing and taking a look at all social media sites. And here's the problem with Charlie Kirk and people of this high notoriety. You don't think there's lots of threats against him that might look all credible? I mean, that's the problem here. I think there's going to be a lot of data points that are going to be populating a potential field of potential assassins on this, because typically assassins, they do fit a profile. Again, not being the profile, but knowing the profiles that fit, it's going to be the 25 to 29 year old in general, white male, Caucasian, that's going to be committing these things. They're going to be on a life arc of escalating violence, disenfranchised, anger management issues, you know, control issues, mm-hmm. and there's going to be a triggering event. So that's what they're going to typically be looking for in general. And they're going to use that as a filter that they're then going to see. Because it sounded to me, I watched the video, I listened to the video, we had a high velocity round, sounded like a rifle shot to me, because you could hear that concussion when that's a bullet breaking the sound barrier. That's why you hear a boom yeah. like this also echo in the area there. The fact that law enforcement said it's about 200 yards away, that's yeah. interesting. They knew how far away. So now they're going to be looking at the trajectory from impact on Charlie himself and where the bullet hit there to kind of get an area of where this bullet and round came from. And once you were able to zero in on that, thank God on the positive side for social media, who wouldn't have their phone out recording this thing? So they're going to be then canvassing that specific area that the bullet came from, then taking that data, superimposing it on top of all the other intelligence they've collected from social media and things like that, fitting that profile so they can start. Because all they're doing now is they have a pool of thousands of people that were there. Mm-hmm. And they're going to start trying to whittle that down through multiple filters, doing all these types of things.
And it should be noted, because we are in the midst of a lot of misinformation going about, not necessarily intentional. It just happens when there's breaking things like this taking place. Yep. There was an arrest, or it appeared to be an arrest. It was attempted to be taking place earlier in the day. It was a man in the 50s, 60s, it looked like. Yeah. He is not the man. Just so everybody knows out there, if you saw that clip and you're like, oh, they did not get the guy. As of this moment, as of this recording, as of this live broadcast, he is not in custody. I would imagine that probably won't be very much longer. Like you said, the way that we have with social media today, they know he was about 200 or 200 meters out or something. Is that about what they're estimating? Yeah. I'm going to guess maybe he dropped the gun and left. I can't imagine he like ran through the crowd with a sniper rifle and kept going. I'm going to think shot taken, he's out. And maybe that's how they figured out the distance of where the shot actually.
Well, it wasn't a mass killer because it wasn't. Yeah. So it wasn't a mass killing. It was a single shot for it was an assassination attempt. Mass shootings, mass killers typically are suicidal as well. Mm-hmm. The fact that it looks like this individual, and the fact that you can't find him, he had an escape plan of some sort. So we're going to kind of see the level of that.
Yeah, and we don't, and that was my speculation there too. I want to be specific. We don't know if he dropped the gun and ran. That's just me speculating at this moment in time. So
I would say, if we're looking at the law of averages, the plan was to not drop.
I got
to
interrupt you because there is a press conference going on right now. We're going to take that live.
Absolutely.
Anybody could have a weapon here. So. UVU
for obstruction of justice. We do still have an active investigation for the person of interest. This incident occurred with a large crowd around. There was one shot fired and one victim. While the suspect is at large, we believe this was a targeted attack towards one individual. This is a tragic moment in our state and in our country. As we heal, we encourage everyone who is struggling with news of the incident to call 988, our state mental health crisis line. In addition to that, our partners with the FBI will also be discussing other ways we can communicate through the public for tips and other information. Thank you.
Good afternoon. On behalf of the FBI, we extend our sincerest condolences to the family and friends of Charlie Kirk. Our thoughts are also with the people who witnessed this traumatic event. We know that what you experienced was very difficult. Our thoughts are with you as well. As soon as we heard about the shooting, special agents and personnel from the Salt Lake Field Office responded immediately. We have full resources devoted to this investigation, including tactical, operational, investigative, and intelligence. To be clear, the FBI will fully support and co-lead this investigation alongside with our partners. We are working on setting up a digital media tip line, and as soon as it's established, we'll get that information out to everyone. I know there's a lot of questions. This is very much an active case, and this investigation is in its early stages. We are following all the leads and all the evidence. If anyone has any information, please report it to the FBI or local law enforcement. Thank you.
On behalf of President Tumenez, who we've been communicating with, and she's on her way back right now, I say that on behalf of Utah Valley University, we are shocked and saddened by the tragic passing of Charlie Kirk. We express our sincere condolences to the Kirk family. We grieve with our students, faculty, and staff who bore witness to this unspeakable tragedy. He was invited by the student group Turning Point USA to speak on our campus. We firmly believe that UVU is a place to share ideas and to debate openly and respectfully. Any attempt to infringe on those rights has no place here. We do not condone any form of violence at UVU and seek to make our campus a safe place for all.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us on this dark and tragic occasion. I want to thank our law enforcement officers who are leading this investigation, starting with Chief Long and his response here with the UVU Police Department. We're grateful for your leadership and your team. And again, to the speakers that you've just heard from who are co-leading this investigation. I also want to recognize Sheriff Mike Smith, who has been an invaluable partner as this investigation moves forward. I've been in touch with President Trump, with FBI Director Kash Patel. We are completely aligned with our state and federal partners as we work through this case. Now, this is a dark day for our state. It's a tragic day for our nation. And I want to be very clear that this is a political assassination. We are celebrating 250 years of the founding of this great nation. That founding document, the Declaration of Independence, that this great experiment on which we embarked together 250 years ago, that we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights. The first one of those is life. And today, a life was taken. Charlie Kirk was first and foremost a husband and a dad to two young children. He was also very much politically involved, and that's why he was here on campus. Charlie believed in the power of free speech and debate to shape ideas and to persuade people. Historically, our university campuses in this nation and here in the state of Utah have been the place where truth and ideas are formulated and debated. And that's what he does. He comes on college campuses and he debates. That is foundational to the formation of our country, to our most basic constitutional rights. And when someone takes the life of a person because of their ideas or their ideals, then that very constitutional foundation is threatened. Now, we have a person of interest in custody. The investigation is ongoing. But I want to make it crystal clear right now to whoever did this, we will find you. We will try you, and we will hold you accountable to the furthest extent of the law. And I just want to remind people that we still have the death penalty here in the state of Utah. Our nation is broken. We've had political assassinations recently in Minnesota. We had an attempted assassination on the governor of Pennsylvania. And we had an attempted assassination on a presidential candidate and former president of the United States, and now current president of the United States. Nothing I say can unite us as a country. Nothing I can say right now can fix what is broken. Nothing I can say can bring back Charlie Kirk. Our hearts are broken. We mourn with his wife, his children, his family, his friends. We mourn as a nation. If anyone in the sound of my voice celebrated even a little bit at the news of this shooting, I would beg you to look in the mirror and to see if you can find a better angel in there somewhere. I don't care what his politics are. I care that he was an American. We desperately need our country. We desperately need leaders in our country. But more than the leaders, we just need every single person in this country to think about where we are and where we want to be. To ask ourselves, is this it? Is this what 250 years has wrought on us? I pray that that's not the case. I pray that those who hated what Charlie Cook stood for will put down their social media and their pens and pray for his family, and that all of us will try to find a way to stop hating our fellow Americans. With that, we're happy to take a few questions.
The FBI director is posting that a suspect is in custody. I would just like clarification. Do you or do you not have a suspected shooter in custody?
We have a person of interest in custody that is being interviewed right now.
Is not George Zinn.
That is not George Zinn. Okay. That is correct.
Are you still searching for another shooter or anybody else related to this?
Yes, we are actively looking for anyone and everyone who has any possible information relating to the shooting.
Can you tell us details about the suspect being taken into custody? Where, how long ago?
We cannot at this point, but we will get you that information when we can.
Is there believed to be a second individual involved in the shooting?
At this point, there is no information that would lead us to believe that there is a second person involved.
Can you guys talk about the possible shooter?
Do you want to talk about what we know there?
Yeah.
The only information we have on the suspect, the possible shooter, is taken from closed circuit TV here on campus. We do have that. We're analyzing it. But it is security camera footage, so you can kind of guess what the quality of that is. But we do know dressed in all dark clothing, but we don't have a much better description other than that.
Where did the shot came from?
The shot came from here on campus, from a location at a
fair,
potentially from a roof. Yes, a longer distance shot from a roof.
So to clarify, with the security camera footage you have and the person of interest that's in custody, does that match up?
That's what we're trying to decipher right now.
So did FBI or DHS have anything on the threat board this morning?
I can't speak.
I'll just say that the investigation is ongoing, and as soon as we have further information, we will be sure to release it.
Any indications of foreign intelligence involvement?
As of now, I can't comment on any of that.
Thank you. Can you talk a little about the security of the event itself? Who was there security-wise, and what happens on these kind of events?
So my name is Jeff Long. I'm the police chief here at UVU. And I'll tell you right now, we're devastated. We're a small police department. We have a very large campus. We have over 40,000 students, and we love our students. We love our visitors, and we're devastated by what happened today. This is the police chief's nightmare. I'm very saddened for the Kirk family. I know his wife and parents found out about this. You know, obviously he's away from home. He's here in Utah. They find out by a police officer that visits their home. That's tragic. Nobody wants that. But I can tell you about our venue today. This was an open venue. This was outside. We did have six officers working that event. We had probably over 3,000 people that were in attendance. It sat down in kind of a bowl area here on the central campus. We have a waterfall area. And so he was kind of in a lower area, surrounded by buildings. You know, we had some plainclothes police officers that were in the crowd as well. You know, we train for these things, and you think you have things covered, and you know, these things. Unfortunately,
you're watching this live press conference from Warren, Utah. And normally we were on the air with World News Tonight. We will join the broadcast in just a moment. I want to bring you up to speed on what we just learned. There is a person of interest now in
custody. Let's take us back. I don't know why David Muir is breaking into the press conference, but we're watching it from ABC News. We'll take it back here in a moment when they do reflect back to it. Robin, before we reflect back to it, what's your thoughts thus far?
Pretty good. I'm heartened that they have someone of interest in custody. They're already cross-referencing, like you and I are already talking about, you know, video camera footage where the bullet came from. So it looks like pretty good. Six officers for 3,000 people. I think that was the
insane
number. Yeah. You know, it's so campuses, I'm heartened that they actually had a police force, because a lot of times campuses don't have a police force. And so at least they're cognizant and witty enough to do that. But that's a large number. Sounds like it's from the rooftop, which I can kind of project it was probably going to be a rooftop type of thing. I'm still getting a sense it's going to kind of fit the what we've been talking about as a lone shooter, not necessarily politically motivated ideology wise, but just he's going to have a life arc of some serious issues. And they're using this as an excuse.
Oh, there are going to be issues there no matter what. I'm going to be shocked if this person doesn't have some sort of political ideology, though. Although, look, the Trump shooter didn't either. So,
yeah, that's what I mean. And neither did John Hinckley Jr. So.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you're exactly right. 9% do, which is mind blowing. I mean, just, you know, to anybody out there that is, because I think, and this is how we take all of our cases half the time, we're approaching things from those of us with a healthy mind and we right. go, how on earth could someone do this? Of course they'd have to be politically motivated to do something like this. And when they're not, we're like, what the hell?
They're broken.
They're broken.
They're broken. They're self-centered, narcissist, wound collecting victims. And yeah. they're using this as, you know, the reason why that the age of roughly mid to late 20s is the age that this typically happens at, if you're going to have a shooter, again, on average, not all, is because this is the age where someone says to themselves, is this all I am? I'm not doing more with my life. I suck. No one likes me. I mean, so mm-hmm. it's that self-loathing starts capitalizing on all these other negative thoughts in their minds. And they say,
Ryan Goldberger. Yeah.
Yes. I need to do something to become notable. And this is what they're going to use.
Yeah. We still obviously, I mean, that's speculation as of this point right now, but we don't know all of the details and we will hopefully come. What do you feel when they say that it's a person of interest in custody, not a suspect, but a person of interest versus a suspect? What does that mean to you as a retired FBI?
Yeah, that they are not trying to, they're trying to manage expectations, I guess.
Yeah, good way
to
okay.
You know, so that's all it is. They're just legally managing expectations of a public because they're trying to do due diligence to make sure that, hey, they don't want to put something out there, because then if they say they have a suspect and they come to find out, sure. oh, he was innocent or not doing it, then they look like idiots.
So six officers, I mean, we saw the shots of this event. I mean, it's huge. It was a big event. Six officers, that's... I've seen more like a grocery store, you know, carnival than would be for this. Is this an example of just a breakdown in incompetency of our thoughts of what we need for security for something like this? Look, I don't know anything about providing security for an event like this, but I know Charlie Kirk is a highly politically,
right.
You know, there's a lot of energy behind this figure, controversy behind this political figure, who would probably have a lot of people that don't like him, that would, if they're not healthy individuals, may not want him around on this planet anymore. And clearly somebody got to him, that we don't know the reasoning yet, but is it just completely asinine and incompetence at the end of the day that you have six officers for an event like this?
Boy, I don't know yet. And here's what my thought process is on, you know, we love, you know, I love talking about life arcs and reps. So Charlie Kirk and Turning Point USA has a lot of reps in doing these events. I know Charlie did have, I heard reported he had security there. I don't know the size.
They have experience
of doing these things, right?
They have a lot of luck doing these events, and this has not happened yet.
Therein lies part of it as well, because, you know, Charlie, as he says and states numerous times, he's a person of faith, and he's going to do what he believes is the right way, and his God will take care of him. And that's part of the way he does what he does and why he resonates so strongly with people. But at the same time, though, I think, again, listening to the chief, you know, I watch people and he seemed pretty together. You know, he seemed like, it didn't look like a Keystone cop to me. It just like, hey, you got six officers, because that's probably the size of his force. So campus police departments, remember, these are people that are being paid by the university. You know, and the university has to spend money. So I'm just looking logistics of it. That's probably the size of his force, maybe.
Yeah.
And so it's not much. I don't know what other locals were part of it or not part of it. Again, because Charlie Kirk's organization has reps in doing this a lot for a lot of years. And so they probably told the local police department what they needed and how this is going to work and everything. And what they didn't account for is that they were doing things the way they've always done them, and someone wasn't. And that's the shooter that came in.
I mean, it's easy for us to have a Monday morning quarterbacking this. Right. This is a few hours after quarterbacking this.
So I'm not jumping on it.
No, but it just seems asinine. I'm not blaming the university. They only have so many resources, and they can only expel so much of what they have to give. But knowing the vitriol of which a individual like this brings to an event of either side, this way, that way, whatever it may be, and the hardened opinions that people have against this sort of, I mean, the guy was literally talking about gun violence as he was murdered by gun violence.
Yeah, he's talking about gang violence and gun violence.
He asked the question about gang violence, but the question was more about gun violence in general. And then he was trying to have a dialogue about it. He's literally assassinated while talking about it. And this is a man who has made many statements about, you know, the gun laws that exist and having access to weapons. I'm not jumping into that by any means. I'm not going to say this way or that way, because it's not the point of this, but obviously he was for very liberal gun laws, not liberal in terms of conserving them, but more so having everyone have access to them, for lack of a better term, Second Amendment rights. That's a good way. Yes. That's what I'm trying to communicate. Right. Thank you, Robin.
he's a Second Amendment guy.
Very Second Amendment rights. Yes. That's what I'm trying to convey. Yep. And it's, I don't know. I mean, it's shocking to think that, I mean, was this a complete failure on the part of his security team to think that this is not a realistic possibility here? You're going into a center of a campus with like tall buildings all around you, and you're expressing your message the way that you are, to think that you're, I don't know. I mean,
what I think, Tony, having seen these for so long now in him and listening to police chief.
Yeah.
I don't think there's a failure in anyone's on this one. I think it was an overestimation of the goodness of humanity by Turning Point USA.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously. I mean, so I think they, from what I understand, I mean, because all we know is when people have reps, they get really good at doing things a certain way. Mm-hmm. Turning Point USA doing these things on campus has a lot of reps for a lot of time. The likelihood that they're going to deviate from what they normally do is slim to none. They could have, something could have popped up and they didn't do the normal security, but I'm guessing and gathering that they had a security protocol that they put in place for every other event they've done that matched this one. I think they coordinated probably with the local law enforcement, did exactly the same thing they've always done before. So they had an arc, probably a flat arc of what they've done, because it's worked every time. When you have a, when things keep working the same way and there's no assassination attempt, there's no curve that needs to go up on that arc. So it's probably pretty level. And part of this level arc, I think, from the way he did things, kind of like when JFK rode in an open car, you don't know what, you don't know the threat until it's a problem. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what probably happened here. I'm guessing, because of just listening to the way he communicates, is that he was relying on faith and the good naturedness of good, healthy dialogue to keep him safe more than he should have.
And that's a sad thing.
I mean, I don't know if I can answer that.
And we should feel that. I mean, that's the thing. No. That's the novelty of America. We've been able to live that way for a very long time. We haven't always been able to live that way. But in many of our lifetimes, we have for a good chunk. But I mean, historically, and you can speak to this. You are such a scholar of history, and you're always in some book about the past.
Right.
I mean, you are one of the most educated people I know on this. But this is as foreign as it is to us right now in this country. This is not foreign to our past. I mean, and even not that super long ago, I mean, before my lifetime, you would have been very young. But I mean, we have had very, very politically violent times in our country. Can you speak to that? On this, are we entering another era? Are we repeating an era?
No, I think we're continuing the era, is a good way to put it. So if we look at things from historical context, we are. I mean, we're not in the 60s with the violence of the 60s. We're not during assassination. I mean, there was so many, we've had so many presidents assassinated over the history of our country, just 250 years. That's pretty profound when you're looking at things. Violence against other human beings, as much as we see these things, you and I cover our true crime every daily, violence against other human beings is at an all-time low as a history of our species, believe it or not, even though it's covered more. And so what we're seeing today is better coverage of everyday reality of a larger population. And so the arc of more or less, it's actually less than it has been in the past. What has increased is our ability to know about it because of media, because of social media. But I think here's our frustration as a species with this, and as Americans or human beings with this, is we'd expect more growth faster.
Yeah.
But as a study of human history, things generally don't happen in tens, twenties, hundreds of years of history. They generally happen, we're talking millennia. You know, us as a species on an upward trend of getting better doesn't happen in a lifetime. It gets a little bit better. We're talking small data points here. But if you look at where we are as a species compared to a couple hundred years ago, freaking great.
Yeah.
1,000 years ago, phenomenal. You know, so, you know, we tend to look at through a very small optic and lens of it's gotten much worse. In a small time frame, we've had a couple more incidents of it. And we'll, part of that is also because people might not be more inflammatory now. We just know about their inflammatory statements more now because there's more social media that's getting paid ad space to put it on now than there was, you know, back in the days of just Walter Cronkite, when according to the FCC, in order to have a license to broadcast, you actually had to give at least 30 to 60 minutes of free public service a day, which meant free news. So no one's selling ad space. Then CNN comes along in the 80s, you know, where the 24-hour news cycle, and they have to pay for that. And so that's where things kind of started escalating in a way of way things are covered, but in a way of us as these things happening, it's about the same. Just they're more, I think the rhetoric is more inflammatory now.
Yeah.
Just because it sells. And I hate to say it that way, but it's because remember, we'll go to the laws of human nature on this as well. What sells, and I hate using that word sell in such a tragic thing, but what, I'll say it like, what gets people to watch?
Mm-hmm.
What gets people to watch is when we have our biases, our thoughts and opinions confirmed. And so when we see things that might be politically motivated, we're going to watch it because we're going to consume it because it either validates what we think or invalidates it. And so we're going to argue against it. So when those things keep getting escalated, this vitriol goes like this. As a species, now I will say this, I think since COVID, our ability to problem solve, especially of a younger generation, has dropped off pretty dramatically. Mm-hmm. And so when you put problem solving skills dropping off, you put more of it being shown out there because people want to consume it because it, what I mean, it's why TikTok is so popular, because we're consuming things that we already agree with so we can feel better about who we are, so we can feel part of networks and teams and organizations. And then when you put that together with the access to violence, lack of problem solving skills, and then I don't want to say mental health issues, because mental health is never an excuse for violence because it's still a choice.
It's the basis of all of them.
I know. It's always the background. So you put all these things together in a soup, because it's never just one thing, but they're all very simple things just coming together to create the maelstrom we're in.
And one of the things that I find very, I guess, ironic is, Robin, we had you on the show earlier this week, and afterward we were talking about 9/11. Mm-hmm. And we were talking about how horrific it was and living through that. And I wanted to say something that I didn't, which was the one good thing that came out of that was we as a nation, as a people of this nation, came together. Oh, we wrapped our arms around one another. Didn't matter what side of the street you were living on. Didn't matter the color of your skin. We were not going to let that happen to us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All of us got together. We did good things. We raised money. We sent water. We did everything we could in the smallest towns in America to make a difference for those who were affected at the Pentagon in New York, all of that. And the further we get away from that, the division seems to come wider and wider. And then we have situations like this that happen. And so it's ironic that we're just a day away from the anniversary of that horrific event in our country. And the way we're responding to this, instead of coming together and say, okay, how can we deal with this? We're still fighting about stuff.
Yeah, I know. I don't think, you know, I was, as you all know, I was in New York during 9/11.
Yeah.
And you're right on that. You know, it's being FBI can be very divisive to some people right now, because people think it's one thing or another. You know, when I was in the FBI for those years, I came in 1997 after the Marine Corps until I retired in 2018. I never knew anyone's politics. And to that point, part of it was because you're right. 9/11 in New York City, where I was there watching 8 people jump from the North Tower before the South Tower even got hit.
Yeah.
I didn't know anyone's politics. And talk about coming together. The way people rallied to give me information, I mean, I remember we had a name hit, and we literally found a business card of someone in an abandoned car in Manhattan, actually it was in Brooklyn, that looked like it might have been affiliated with one of the suicide
the terrorists. Pilots,
terrorists, right? And so, and the business card had the doctor's name, and his doctor was at Roosevelt Hospital in Lower Manhattan. And I remember talking to my partner that I was working with, because we had to go interview this doctor, see what he knew about this individual. And we're like, oh my God, doctors, there's no way they're not going to do anything without subpoena, FISA, whatever it is. Because all we want to know is, what did you think about this person? Because happy people don't do horrible things. That's literally, that's one of the greatest filters you can have if you're looking for criminals, is are they happy or are they wound collectors? I mean, it starts with that. And that's the only question I was going to ask, is what do you think about this patient? And I was like, there's no way they're going to talk to us. You know, when we, after 9/11, we walked in that hospital, they had an entire conference room set up with every single human being that ever had any interaction with this one individual. And one of the doctors on sabbatical was on the conference call from France, because they wanted to help. Every car in New York City, if you did not have an American flag flying on your car, they looked at you sideways.
Yeah.
It was mind blowing. There was no politics. It was work the problem. You know, people holding up signs as I was going down to the site every day, you know, watching little kids holding up signs, please find my daddy. That's that kind of stuff that rallies you together. But you're right. In a situation like this, why aren't we seeing this anymore?
I mean, it's amazing where we are 23 years later.
Crazy.
Yeah. What happens next? I think is the big question everybody is concerned with, because this does, I don't, it feels like more of a tinderbox than anything else. I mean, honest to God, I mean, this feels different than the attempt on Trump. This feels different than any that's recently happened.
And I think, Tony's, because again, the politics aside, Charlie Kirk's methodology for engaging was different than everyone else's. He was a different type of person when he was engaging people, because he wasn't calling people names. He wasn't tweeting about, you know, horrendous things on Twitter.
His views may have diametrically opposed you, but he wasn't like, you're an effing horrible human being and this and that and all that. Yeah.
A good way to put it, the way he engaged it was as a 32-year-old, a 31-year-old dad who cared about his two kids and his wife. Who cared about talking to youth of America to get them to think. That remember, if you actually, I haven't done the deep dive, I haven't been to any sites on Turning Point USA, but I know his methodology was to get people to think. That's all it was about, which is different than everyone else. And so I think that's why it's hitting everyone, because I think as a human being, we can identify with someone who just cares very deeply without trying to hurt anyone. He wasn't trying to shut down anyone. He's just trying to get people to think, whether you believed him or didn't believe him. He just wanted a thoughtful dialogue and a respectful dialogue. And I think that's part of and also his youth. Yeah. I mean, 31 years old. That's also why it hits us. The venue in which it hit,
he was an elementary student on 9/11.
Yeah, you know, I think it's. All the factors that mean something to us as a species is what really was hitting here. Again,
it's humanity. This is more of a humanity because it's not a political. It is political, but it's not a congressperson. It's not this. It's not that.
He wasn't elected.
It's someone who you have a disagreeing view on. But I'm sorry, Charlie Kirk, at the end of the day, as much as my politics disagreed with him, I could probably have sat down at a bar and had a drink or two and talked. And we would have walked away going, at the end of the day, talking about our kids and going, you're a good dad, I'm a good dad. It's, you know, have a good night.
And so I'm going to give an insight about how I did what I did in the Bureau and what I do every day now with this. So, and this is why I love studying history so much, because what you start learning and understanding about human beings is that there's a lot in here that makes me up.
Yeah.
And if you're looking for that negative confirmation bias about what you don't like in someone, you're going to find it.
Yeah.
I put that aside because I had to make a beautiful, deep human connection with absolutely everyone. And so what I would do is, and what I do all the time, what I'm trying to do here with Charlie is, this is a small part of the whole. Let's take this part that you don't agree with Charlie, because you don't agree with everyone on everything. Let's take that and put it over here. So Tony, you gave a great analogy. Could you sit down and have a great dialogue with Charlie? Yes. If you didn't know about this one little part, let's put it over here. Because you are a great dad that cares very deeply about your daughter. He is a great dad that cares very deeply about his kids. I guarantee you, because that's where I made most of my connections with the people I talk to from all over the world. I made a connection as a father, as a parent. Yeah. What can we do together to make the world a better place for our kids?
Yeah. We've always talked about that, you and me together.
Yes.
For years, yeah.
And the same thing with him. That's why I think he resonates so strongly, because he's a young parent that was just trying to make the world a better place. You don't have to understand or agree with his how to do it. But the fact that we all care about the same thing without being insulting. Well, people can take it insulting because that's context. But again, that was not the intent, you know, because a lot of our elected officials will do things just to get you. You know, he didn't have to worry about the next election. All he was doing was just worrying about trying to make the place where he lives for his family a better place. And so I think that's why it also hits us a little bit differently, because he wasn't a politician. Anyway, just my rhetoric about how we make connection with the human beings is just, hey, if you don't like something, good. Just don't pay attention to that. You'll always find what you're looking for. That's why when people are always trying to say, hey, I'm a human truth detector. No, if you're looking for false statements, you're always going to find false statements. Why don't you start looking for truth statements? You'll find those too.
What happens next? What happens tomorrow with events like this? With, I mean, my God, I mean, all the events that politicians hold, I feel like everyone's a sitting duck right now for any loose cannon that's out there. I feel like they just had their fuses lit and they're ready to go.
Yeah, I call these moments, let's take the big pause. Do the best we can, because when we are emotionally hijacked, all of us, you know, this isn't a very emotional moment for everyone. Is let's take a pause. No decisions during this. No emergency takeoffs, as I say.
Yes.
You know, let's move forward with, all right, take a step back. Let's see exactly what happened, exactly who this person is. Let's get some data in and see what we're going to do to move forward and make it safer, make it better, and do the most important thing that we all do is how do we inspire people to feel safe to do important things? And one of the most important things we do is we share information, we share ideas to make the world a better place for those that we're leaving behind, most notably our children.
Exactly. This isn't about liking or disliking Charlie Kirk. It's about what his killing means for every public figure, every student, every person who wants to speak out and speak their opinion in America.
To make it a better place.
Yeah. If violence becomes the price of free expression, the cost is too high. We're going to keep following this, and we're going to keep asking the questions. Robin's going to keep joining us to discuss all of this and all the stuff we cover here. Thank you for joining us this afternoon in a very shitty event short notice. But my God, I so value your opinion, and personally and professionally. And I thank you for coming on today and sharing this, because I think a lot of people needed to hear what you have to say. You're always such a voice of reason, Robin. Thank you so much for coming on this afternoon and sharing those thoughts with us.
Always, Tony.
That's going to wrap up our coverage for this afternoon. Tomorrow morning, 10 a.m., we'll pick it back up. I don't know if we're going to be diving more into this or what exactly it will be at that moment. I'm sure there'll be more of this going on. But we'll be covering it for you right here. Be sure to press subscribe so you don't miss that. For all of us here at the Hidden Killers podcast, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
It's Cybersecurity Awareness Month. LifeLock is here with tips to help protect your identity. Use strong passwords, set up multi-factor authentication, report scams, and update your software. And for comprehensive identity protection, LifeLock is your best choice. LifeLock alerts you to suspicious uses of your personal information and fixes identity theft, guaranteed, or your money back. Start your protection today with a 30-day free trial at LifeLock.com. Use promo code NEWS. Terms apply.